Good morning. I am Rachel Salas-Silverman, Director of Public Relations for the American Association for Cancer Research. I want to welcome you to the AACR-NCI-EORTC International Conference on Molecular Targets and Cancer Therapeutics being held in Boston beginning tomorrow through Wednesday, October 30th. Today's media briefing is teleconference only and is the first of two. Our second media briefing will occur this Monday, October 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join us by either attending on-site at the Heinz Convention Center in Boston or by teleconference. Please register by contacting Matthew Burns or myself. In total, there are six abstracts that have been selected for the Molecular Targets Press Program. Please note the embargo policy for this meeting. All abstracts lift embargo at the beginning of their respective sessions. Embargo times have been listed at the top of each press release, but a quick reminder, Dr. Schramm's abstract lifts embargo this Sunday, October 27th at 11:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dr. Wick's abstract lifts embargo this Sunday at 12:30 p.m. While Dr. Heiss could not be available for this media briefing, this abstract lifts embargo on Sunday at 11:50 a.m. We will begin with remarks by our two scientific co-chairs of the meeting who will be moderating this briefing. Dr. Schramm will then be the first presenter. After her talk, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If you do have a question, please remember to press star 1. Dr. Wick will be the second presenter during today's briefing. A question and answer session will then follow his presentation. We were very fortunate that Dr. Wick was able to rearrange his schedule last minute to accommodate this media briefing. You would have just received an email from the AACR with the updated slide deck about 15 minutes ago containing his presentation. Our moderators will then provide additional perspective on the meeting at large and discuss some of the key abstracts that underscore themes of the meeting. Finally, slides for today's meeting have been distributed by email once again. Look for the email. You should have received our moderator's disclosures as well as our presenter slides. If you have any issues, please contact Matt Burns at matthew.burns@aacr. And now, it's my true pleasure to introduce you to our esteemed moderators. Bill Sellers is a core institute member of the Broad Institute of MIT and professor of medicine at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Medical School. After his remarks, Emiliano Calvo will join him, and he is the director of START Madrid Group at CIOC in Madrid, Spain. Dr. Sellers.
Hi. It's a pleasure for me to moderate this session with Emiliano. And just to kick it off, I wanted to say how exciting a period of time this is in the development of therapeutics and oncology. I trained in medical oncology in 1990, and I can tell you the landscape has drastically changed from a period of time where we essentially had chemotherapy and maybe one or two antibodies to a period of time where we have multiple distinct modalities that are all now showing significant efficacy in human patients, including, of course, immuno-oncology and checkpoint inhibitors. But as you'll see in the meeting, we're also focusing on a number of other modalities that are emerging to the fore, including protein degradation targeting using things like PROTACs, CAR T cells, which will be featured in the meeting, and of course, tremendous progress in targeting some of the critical oncogenes in cancer, including directly targeting the most common oncogene in cancer, which is KRAS. So I think in addition to the things we'll talk about today and on Monday's press briefing, I think you'll see a lot of quite exciting presentations at the meeting and many exciting abstracts.
Thank you very much. This is Emiliano Calvo. My pleasure to co-chair this joint Congress of AACR-NCI-EORTC on behalf of the URTC. This annual Congress has become, after more than 30 years, the home of early phase oncology drug development, the premier international meeting featuring novel cancer therapeutics regarding drug discovery, biology, and early phase clinical applications. And as Bill was saying, we have an exciting program thanks to the scientific committee that was able to select very good abstract and non-abstract programs as well, with novelties regarding targeting molecular subtypes of cancer, protein degradation, DNA repair, KRAS, epigenetics, novel small molecules, immuno-oncology, drug resistance, cell therapy, targeting innate immune system, and also some novel applications and development regarding liquid biopsies, animal models, imaging, and some approaches and designs like big data, algorithm-based machine learning, and AI applications to drug development, and different ways of testing combos. So I think that this Congress is going to be really fruitful and enjoyable for everybody, and will provide us with a good taste or sense of how the field is moving forward.
Right, so now it's my pleasure to introduce our first abstract, and just to introduce the concept, you probably are aware of antibodies like Rituxan and Herceptin, and those antibodies tend to bind a single protein target. So, for example, Herceptin binds directly to HER2. But over the past several years, it's now been possible to engineer new types of antibodies that can recognize more than one protein simultaneously, and those antibodies are called bispecifics. So those have also been quite interesting in immuno-oncology. But in this case, Alison Schramm of Memorial Sloan Kettering is going to present a bispecific antibody known as MCLA-128 and its early clinical activity in patients with solid tumors harboring NRG1 gene fusions. So I'll turn it over to Alison.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. My name is Ali Schramm. As mentioned, I'm a medical oncologist in the Early Drug Development Service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and I would like to talk to you about a clinical proof of concept for MCLA-128, a bispecific HER2-HER3 antibody in NRG1 fusion-positive cancers. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And you can go on to the next slide. So as some background, and thank you for that brief background, neuregulin, also known as NRG1, is a ligand that binds to HER3, promoting HER2-HER3 heterodimerization and activation of the PI3 kinase signaling pathway, which is important for cancer. NRG1 gene fusions are oncogenic drivers found across numerous solid tumor types, typically at an incidence of less than 1%. However, they are enriched in certain cancers, including KRAS wild type, so pancreas cancer, so pancreas cancers without the KRAS mutation, and a rare subtype of lung cancer, invasive mucinous adenocarcinoma of the lung, among other diseases. MCLA-128 is a bispecific antibody that docks on HER2, optimally positioning an anti-HER3 arm to block neuregulin HER3 binding, and also physically blocking HER2-HER3 heterodimerization. It was also developed to enhance antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity, also known as ADCC, to engage the immune system. On the bottom left, you see a schematic of NRG1 fusions and how they activate signaling, and MCLA-128 and how it blocks that activated signaling pathway. MCLA-128 is effective in NRG1 fusion-positive cell line and xenograft models. And on the bottom right, you can see two such examples of NRG1 fusion positive models that show tumor growth with MCLA-128. You can go to the next slide. At Sloan Kettering, we have treated three NRG1 fusion positive patients with MCLA-128 on single patient expanded access protocols, and I'll present the results here. Two patients had metastatic pancreatic cancer harboring ATP1B1 NRG1 fusions. And on the left, you see a 52-year-old gentleman who initially presented to medical attention with localized pancreas cancer, which was resected. He had adjuvant chemotherapy, unfortunately developed metastatic disease, and then was put on additional chemotherapy. He had a lot of chemotherapy side effects, and his tumor markers continued to actually rise during therapy, and ultimately he progressed in February 2019. His tumor was sequenced and found to not have the KRAS mutation and to have an NRG1 fusion, and in that setting, we put him on MCLA-128. And the graph on the bottom left shows his CA19-9, which is a good tumor marker for him, in addition to tumor size as measured by RECIST. And you can see here that he had a dramatic response, both biochemically and also with tumor shrinkage evident on imaging. His CA19-9 dramatically declined within a couple of weeks, and his tumor was found to have a confirmed partial response by RECIST with 54% shrinkage as his maximal shrinkage. On the right, you see a 34-year-old gentleman who similarly had KRAS wild-type pancreatic cancer with an NRG1 fusion. He presented with metastatic disease and had a prolonged course of chemotherapy with ultimate progression and was started on MCLA-128 also in March of 2019. You see on the bottom right his same graph showing a dramatic decline of his tumor markers, with his CA19-9 going from greater than 400 to normal within weeks, and his tumor shrinking with a stable disease by RECIST, but a negative 25% shrinkage. Both patients remain on treatment 7-plus months into therapy and are tolerating extremely well, with improvement in both disease-related symptoms and resolution of chemotherapy-associated toxicity, and they feel really very blessed to be on this therapy and feeling great. We can go on to the next slide. The third gentleman is a 54-year-old male with CD74 NRG1 fusion positive non-small cell lung cancer. He had been treated with 6 prior lines of chemotherapy, including afatinib, which is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor that inhibits the HER pathway. He had primary progression on afatinib with growth during treatment. Developed brain metastases, has had radiation twice to the brain, and after completing radiation was put on MCLA-128 when his tumor was found to have this NRG1 fusion. The graph on the bottom left shows his tumor shrinkage by RECIST, and you see that he has a confirmed partial response with his most recent scan a couple of days ago showing 41% tumor shrinkage. The scan is depicted on the bottom right, and you can visualize that his tumor in the lung has it has significantly shrank. He also feels very well on this therapy as opposed to on chemotherapy. We have an ongoing phase 2 basket trial that opened just recently that is enrolling NRG1 fusion positive patients. And we are very excited about that option based on this preliminary experience with these 3 patients feel that this is truly a novel paradigm for targeting these rare genomic alterations. So that's my data, and if I can answer any questions, I would be happy to.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Schramm, and we'd be happy to take questions.
Please press star 1 if you do have a question. Okay, we have one from Jacob Cleese.
Yes, hello. It's Jacob Cleese here from Vantage in London. That's pretty intriguing data. What I'd like to understand is, your screening process seems to identify 29 patients with the NRG1 mutation, but you only treated 3. So what happened to the rest of them?
Great question. So NRG1 as a targetable alteration has only recently been recognized. Our group published a response of an NRG1 fusion positive pancreas to a HER3 antibody that's not being developed. And since the recognition recently of this as being a targetable alteration, we have started to treat these patients. But many of the patients in the group of 29 either had passed away prior to access to this type of therapy, or a few of them are actually localized disease and are not in need of ongoing therapy at this time. But we are putting every patient in need of active therapy with this alteration on this clinical trial or on these single patient protocols.
Okay, I understand. And if this thesis behind treating NRG1 fusion patients this way is as overwhelming as it seems to be, do you think there's any point treating any patient that hasn't got the NRG1 fusion with MCLA-128?
We think that the biology is very beautiful biology, and the mechanism of action of the drug very, very elegantly seems to work in these fusions. The assumption that we have is that this is a very targeted therapy for this genetic alteration, and so at this point, we feel that this is the most appropriate treatment selection strategy. The drug itself will target the HER2, HER3 pathway in other ways, so perhaps there are other biomarkers for this drug, but this to us is the most likely effective group, and so the initial place to start.
Okay, and can you say something very quickly about safety, any toxicities you've seen?
Oh, absolutely. So the safety data of MCLA-128 has been presented elsewhere. They have treated greater than 117 patients at the recommended phase 2 doses and 145 patients in total. There have been less than 5% of patients who have treatment-related, as attributed by the investigators, treatment-related grade 3 and 4 toxicity. So extremely well-tolerated compared to other cancer drugs out there. My experience with these three patients is that they feel really great, and that, you know, especially having come off of chemotherapy, they are all really very happy with the toxicity profile. With, you know, there's some minor infusion reactions that have been noted. One of these patients had an infusion reaction, but we were able to manage it by decreasing the dose. So I think overall, the toxicity profile of this drug is extremely favorable compared to chemotherapy and to other targeted therapies.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll now turn it over to Dr. Calvo.
Thank you very much. To put the next work within a context, as you know, the regulatory agencies have approved different CDK4/6 inhibitors because of their demonstrated clinical benefit in patients with hormone-dependent breast cancer. However, whether there is different sensitivity to each one of these CDK inhibitors and whether these inhibitors demonstrate activity towards other tumor types is not clear yet. So the next work is a PDX-based screen system to evaluate and compare different CDK4/6 inhibitors in breast cancer and also to determine if there is efficacy in additional tumor types from one of the CDK inhibitors. It is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Michael Wick, who is the Director of Non-Clinical Research for START in Texas.
Dr. Wick, make sure you put yourself off mute.
Hello. Hi. Thank you, Emiliano, for that introduction. Thank you for allowing us to present some of our data today. So the title of the short presentation is CDK4 inhibitors, palbociclib activity in breast and other cancer types in comparison with two same-class inhibitors, preclinical analysis. Next slide, please. As a background, our group has established over 1,400 PDX models, including over 100 hormone receptor or ER-positive breast cancer, as well as a large number of estrogen receptor ER-negative models. We've also been able to establish a large number of these patient-derived xenografts or PDX models from patient samples in a number of other indications. For this particular project, as Emiliano mentioned, as a background, these CDK4/6 inhibitors there's three of them, and all of them have been approved in ER-positive breast cancer in combination with a secondary agent, aromatase inhibitor. From the preclinical and clinical development, these three agents, palbociclib, abemaciclib, and ribociclib, are known to affect a number of cellular functions. First and foremost, they're the CDK4/6 pathway, but also a number of other pathways. It's also been shown that these inhibitors, individually and together, represent subtle and not so subtle differences in side effects, tolerability, and patients, and then also activity. So in our current presentation, we asked three questions. The first one being, do our models represent breast cancer patients? And these are our ER-positive and ER-negative breast models. Second, are there differences between the three FDA-approved CDK4/6 inhibitors? And finally, as Emiliano pointed out, could these be used, these CDK4/6 inhibitors, be used to treat other cancers and have the same effects that we've seen in ER-positive breast? The slide here represents, on the top right, we're looking at a waterfall plot. And for clarity, there's three black arrows demonstrating that the y-axis goes from -50 to 100%. Each of the columns represent a model that's been tested, a breast cancer model. The lighter blue representing estrogen receptor positive breast, and then the darker blue estrogen receptor negative breast. And then the asterisks are ones that have a third category of breast cancer that we're not going to discuss today. Models that have close to 100%, which are on the far right, have no effect compared with untreated when they were treated with the CDK4/6 inhibitor palbociclib. If they're at zero, that means that the tumor never grew, so that would be considered stasis. And then if it dropped below the 0% line, that would represent tumor regression in a preclinical model. On the left side, you can see on the dashed rectangle, that's a pullout or sort of a picture-in-picture of the most responsive models. And you can see the lighter the model has, the 2177 is the most responsive with a 25% regression. And then an ER-negative model next to it, ST2826, demonstrated tumor regressions. You'll notice on the right bottom the immunohistochemistry, where you'll see the 2177 model has a brown dots. That represents positivity whenever we are staining for estrogen receptors, showing that that particular model represents ER-positive breast, while the 2826, where you only see the blue, that represents ER-negative breast. One of the other things to point out in the middle bottom is you can see the clinical treatment history. We're lucky enough for these patients who have provided these samples to develop these models actually reside in San Antonio and are in our program. So we're able to track their treatment history and then also their outcome and compare it with the effects of the models that we've generated from their samples. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, there are three currently approved CDK4/6 inhibitors, abemaciclib from Eli Lilly, palbociclib from Pfizer, and ribociclib from Novartis. The second question that we asked is whether or not in our model system, our breast cancer model system, whether these drugs would act in the same manner towards the responsive or non-responsive models from our palbociclib data. And on the left, you can see a blue circle showing the response area, and then on the far right, you can see the non-response area. Interestingly, you can see that there is very differential activity between the three drugs, whether in the traditional palbociclib-sensitive areas, and even more exciting, on the far right, you can see that ribociclib actually showed significant, or not quite sensitive, but improved activity in models that palbociclib demonstrated no activity in. And abemaciclib also, in this case, demonstrated activity in some of the most non-responsive models to palbociclib. This represents, once again, the differential potential for these molecules and really the need to identify subpopulations of hormone receptor positive and potentially hormone receptor negative breast patients that may actually benefit from one of these three approved agents. Next slide. Our final question is whether or not palbociclib would have a similar effect on cancers outside of hormone receptor positive breast. So we screened in addition to the 100 models that we screened for breast, we screened an additional 350 models of non-breast solid tumors. Four of the indications are shown here, as well as the number of models in each indication, 71 for colorectal, 56 for lung, and so on. And you can see from these results, and these are only the far left of the waterfall plot, but you can see that a number of these models in each indication demonstrated partial tumor regressions. In lung, we actually had a complete tumor regression or tumor stasis. This data suggests that other indications may benefit from palbociclib treatment or the other CDK4/6 inhibitors. And we look forward to everyone joining us at our poster to see the additional 200-plus models that we screened and our results. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wick. Are there any questions for Dr. Wick? If so, please press star 1. And I'm going to give you all a moment to formulate your question for Dr. Wick. And in the meantime, I'm going to move back to Dr. Schramm. If you could unmute yourself. We do have a question from Suzanne Rose of Cancer Discovery. Suzanne, are you still on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Terrific. I was a little bit confused about the patient numbers that you mentioned at the end regarding the safety analysis. It sounded like you had more than 100. Is that correct?
Correct. So MCLA-128 has been evaluated in phase 1 already. Their initial development strategy was in HER2 amplified cancers, and in a more traditional dose escalation that involved several different tumor types. So the safety data is based on patients that were not dosed with this genomic abnormality. The big kind of exciting change that has just launched this past month is that this clinical trial has now, there has been a phase 2 that's been focusing now specifically on NRG1 fusion positive cancers, and that will be a basket trial that has recently opened that has 3 cohorts, but really is a basket format, which is KRAS wild-type pancreas cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, and then all other solid tumors. And so that is the focus going forward. But the safety information, we actually have a wealth of safety data based on their dose escalation and treatment of patients with different genomic abnormalities and tumor types.
And the basket trial, all the patients need to have the NRG1 fusion, or are there other genomic abnormalities that are being assessed?
So correct. All the patients need to have the NRG1 fusion. This fusion, as you know, fusions in general in cancer have become really exciting, actionable genomic alterations, and we've seen some of the best response rates and durability of targeted therapy and targeting fusions, including NTRK, ROS, ELK, ROT, ABLE, and so forth. And we are excited about this genomic abnormality specifically as being a biomarker of response to this therapy based on the unique mechanism of action of the drug. So we will focus specifically on NRG1 fusion-positive cancers.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we're going to turn it back over to Dr. Sellers, who is going to talk about several additional abstracts that we wanted to make sure were on your radar.
Yeah, so we thought we'd highlight a few abstracts that I think are addressing an important issue in the immuno-oncology space. So I think if you look at the number of trials and the number of therapeutics that are being tested currently in the clinic, they're both reflective of the excitement and the potential for these agents to make a significant impact in humans, but they're also reflective of sort of the dearth of clinical models and that would allow us to more robustly discern which mechanisms are relevant to which patients in the preclinical setting rather than having to test everything in the clinic. And unlike targeted therapies, such as the one we just heard about, where you can often find a cell line or a model system in which to optimize the inhibitor, because most of our human tumors grow in immunocompromised mice, we haven't really had great model systems with which to evaluate the checkpoint inhibitors and or all of the combinations. So I was particularly interested in two abstracts, abstract 405. The first author is Sonia Iyer. The last author is Bob Weinberg, famous for his discovery of the RAS oncogene, and abstract 652, which is actually from the same group. This is a collaboration between the Weinberg lab and Ben Neal's group at NYU. And they are reporting a new model system in which they've taken fallopian tube epithelial cells from a mouse and using CRISPR-Cas9 have engineered the relevant human genetic alterations into these cells in order to generate completely syngeneic mouse models that recapitulate human ovarian cancer. And then because the model is syngeneic, that means you can grow these models in a immune intact mouse and study relevant immunomodulation in a tumor that is, while not human, has been engineered to have the relevant genetic alterations. So I think one can look at this as sort of the type of model systems we need to be developing with which we could then evaluate a number of the immuno-oncology checkpoint inhibitors and combinations in the future. So I think that would be quite interesting. The second area that will, I think, be interesting, it might not make it into sort of, let's say, the marketplace, but it should, I think, become something useful in the clinical evaluation of immuno-oncology agents is the ability to image the distribution of immune cells in the human by PET tracing of either T cell or B cell or other markers. So there are ongoing, not in this abstract, but abstract 438 is the PET imaging of biomarkers in which they're going to talk about radio tracers for anti-PD-L1 antibodies, but also I think one should be looking at PET tracers that are being used to detect CD8 and CD4 cells as ways to look at T-cell trafficking. The idea being that, of course, if a checkpoint inhibitor enhances T-cell activity and T-cell migration to a tumor, you'd be able to directly visualize that in a phase 1 or phase 2 trial. So I would point out this abstract 438 from the group in Copenhagen, the first author is Karsten Nielsen, as another example of attempts to make our evaluation of IO agents more robust at an earlier stage of development.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sellers. Now I'd like to ask Dr. Calvo to provide some additional comments.
Yes, regarding the clinical studies presented this Congress, I think that there are some of them that are really interesting with novel targets and first-in-human experience. In addition to the data presented already by Dr. Schramp, I think that abstract number 93 is quite interesting, which is a MAT2A inhibitor targeting cancer metabolism with lymphomas and advanced solid tumors that has Emosigo's MTAP deletion, which is kind of Achilles heel that makes these tumors more sensitive to this agent. In addition, there is another one that is abstract number 602, which is also a first-in-human study of a small molecule orally given that is inhibiting AP1-REF1 protein, which has to do with DNA repair and redox signaling of important transcription factors that include NFKB, STAT3, and HIF1-alpha. And it is quite a neat work with a lot of information, PK, PD, and also from a clinical standpoint. In addition, we have abstract number 666, which is a ERK1/2 inhibitor for patients with advanced tumors with mutations in RAS/RAF or MEK, but this is something that we will be seeing next Monday together with some other drugs targeting KRAS.
Well, this concludes our media briefing for today. I would like to thank our presenters, Dr. Schramm and Dr. Wick, our moderators, Dr. Calvo and Dr. Sellers, and thank you all for joining us. Again, our next media briefing occurs this Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time here at the Hines Convention Center in Boston, or you're also welcome to dial in by teleconference. To obtain that phone number, please RSVP with either Matthew Burns or myself. And in the interim, we look forward to communicating with you all offline. Thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.